Witches and mortals seldom do mix, but when mixed marriage is on the cards, insanity pursues with the classic 60s sitcom Bewitched, with your co-hosts, Vicky Ray, Rod Labby, and Keith Chandler. Witches have never been so exposed before.
Hello, welcome to Literary License Podcast, and today we're doing Bewitched Season 1, Episodes 21 to 24. Yes, and before we start, let's find out who's with us. We got Jesse Fultz. Hello, Jesse, how are you?
Hey, everybody, how are you guys doing?
How are you, Jess?
Yeah.
Great.
And moving on from lethargic Jesse, we have Vicky Ray. Hello, Vicky. How are you?
Hello, everybody. I'm just all happy and peppy. That's probably because it's 9 degrees in Dallas. It's like,
got to do something to keep yourself warm.
Yeah. Well, now we got to go to Tulsa because Asher's got a national up there. And so after we're done here, we're going to brave the snowstorm of 3 to 6 inches, Keith. It's 3 to 6 inches. It's going to be a blinding, life endangering storm. We grew up with like 4 feet in one night. So, but other than that, I'm good.
And myself, this is Keith Shago, and I guess we'll find out what we've been up to. And let's start out with Vicky. Vicky, what have you been up to besides what you're going to do?
It's like, yes, just come to my house and break in.
Yeah, you totally threw me off there. Where are we?
It's because I haven't had enough coffee this morning. I ran out of my Freddy Krueger blend. Mm-hmm. But no, haven't been up to much. It's been really cold here. We've been kind of stuck because it's been kind of iced in, and you can drive in snow, but you can't drive in ice. And Fort Worth had 135 car pile up on the highway, and people did die. It's kind of sad, but geez, they were going fast. But other than that, I finished watching The Stand, and I really liked it. The last episode, I'm trying to figure out, but I'm going to have to go read like part of the last of The Stand because I don't remember it ending that way.
Well, I think Stephen King wrote an extra coda to it, apparently.
Really? Because I don't remember it happening that way. And I won't say because I know people are still probably watching it. But And then I watched Alice in Borderland because Keith suggested it. Totally loved it. But that was Japanese. That was a Japanese film on Netflix. That was excellent. And then I watched Sweet Home. Was that on Netflix too? Yeah.
That's on Netflix. As well, yeah.
That was awesome. I mean, I'm really on a Korean horror kick. I love them guys. They have got some of the best horror coming out, an independent film. It's like, Hollywood's okay, I guess. They don't have anything. What's the word? What's the word I want to use that they don't have anything coming out that's original anymore?
Yeah.
They're trying to do reboot after.
Well, it's because Hollywood's formulaic, and I feel like international studios are trying to do more experimental things. Maybe they're not as predictable,
but there's
also think it's not all, but it's also not all about the money, isn't it?
No, exactly. It's about the passion of it.
And yeah, like and it shows. I will say I watched one movie probably because the archaeologist in me wanted. I watched The Dig, and that was on Netflix, and it wasn't like a horror movie. But I kind of dialed it back from 11 and watched a normal movie. But it was really good. It was really, really good. So if anybody wants to dial it back, that was a good one to watch. What about y'all?
What about you, Jess? What have you been up to?
Well, I finally got my website published. Go to amalgamationstudios.com and check out all my work. All my art is posted there, and I'm currently looking for clients. Give me work, please.
Starving artist.
And yeah, and I've been doing school, taking art studies, so that's always fun. It's all at home right now, so that's where I'm doing it, I guess. I got my own laptop to work from. So that's pretty much all I've been doing is working on art stuff and my school so far. I did go see a friend's baby that was just born. That was fun.
That was fun.
Yeah.
Was it cute or ugly?
No, I would say it was fun. It was fun. No, it was a cute baby. She's her name's Coraline after the character from that Neil Gaiman movie.
Which movie?
Coraline.
I don't. Oh,
it's a stop. It's a stop motion on film that was done by the same people who did Nightmare Before Christmas and James and Giant.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's so cool, it looks like a Tim Burton movie, but it's not.
You're not the only one that's dragging ass today.
Yeah. I think it's the cold weather.
It's freaking cold in Dallas. We're not used to it down here anymore. I'm not used to it anymore. I don't like it.
Yeah. Well, myself, I finished watching Sweet Home, which I loved. I also finished watching Isaac had me watch this anime series called Tokyo Ghoul, which I finished watching that, which is good. I'm not as good as Sweet Home. I also watched a Russian one called Not of Us about androids, which was excellent. So I've been watching a lot of foreign stuff. I watched a couple of Swedish films, which are really good. I can't tell you what they are because they were like the Swedish title. And I'm just going to sound like the Swedish chef from The Muppets. So it's probably not a good thing. And I'll probably just offend people. I'm working a lot of work. So, but besides that, that's it really. My life's not that exciting. Keeping warm, bloody freezing sort of thing.
What's the temperature over across the pond?
-2 Celsius.
Yeah.
Just 2 degrees Celsius below freezing. So I guess that probably the equivalent of 28 degrees.
Yeah, it's cold. Cold here. I know that.
So, I mean, I probably got the thingy in my phone, but I don't know. Yeah, no, I only got it.
It's 24 here.
It's probably about that degree. It's probably about that here. And it's been snowing. It's been snowing here and blah de da. But I mean, it doesn't stick. So, surprisingly enough, everything's still open here because normally it's like a flight flies down and everything closes down, but no, they're keeping running. So, and besides that, COVID's getting better here, so that's okay. Oh, so hopefully I'll be back to my full-time job soon without having to deal with that. And been teaching Army guys stuff about data protection, which is always fun.
Army guys.
We got the Army here at the moment helping out with the health service because we're overburdened.
Overwhelmed.
So, but besides that, life just goes on. Just makes you want a polywater duel all the day. Yay. So I guess this now brings us to Bewitch. And our first episode is episode 21 called Ling Ling. Knowing that Darren needs a new model for a campaign, Samantha turns a stray Siamese cat into an attractive woman named Ling Ling, played by Greta Chi. But the appearance of Ling Ling, who knows she's a cat and brings these cat sensibilities to her human life, is unintended consequences, most specifically that the agency's up-and-coming photographer, Wally, played by Jeremy Slate, starts to fall in love with her. Ling Ling, in turn, likes the attention she's receiving from Wally as opposed to the life of a cat. Samantha has to figure out how to tell Darren the truth about Ling Ling while she and Darren try to persuade Wally that Ling Ling is not the right woman for him. So, Jesse, what do you think about Ling Ling?
I love this episode. It was so funny. the one scene that sticks out to me the most was when Gladys was outside after she put out a saucer of milk because she felt bad for blaming the cat for eating her bird earlier, and then she looks down and sees Ling Ling in her human form drinking milk, and then she goes to fetch Abner, and Abner comes back, and of course, as per the usual, he sees her as the cat, and so she has
her bottle and her
big
bottle
spoonful of medicine. I wonder
what he's giving her.
I know there's no indication of what it is. Maybe it's just, you know, hardcore molasses or something, but I don't know what it could possibly
be. I think it's alcohol.
Like, what medicine comes in it? Really? Well, yeah. I mean, most medicines, I think, then were alcohol-based.
Yeah.
You know, like the Lucy episode, you know, when she drinks that and gets all, you know,
Vita
drunk
Vita
from it.
Benjamin.
So. Yeah.
Vita Vita Benjamin.
Because in a late, and one of the other episodes that we'll cover later, the last one that we cover.
Oh, yeah. This was another episode.
And she's swinging out of that bottle. And then she's like really happy
she's
and smiling.
So used to it. She's getting so used to it. She has to, just to function in her marriage and whatever. But this was like, how many episodes with that Siamese cat? Because I'm pretty sure it's the same Siamese cat that we've seen in prior episodes that we've already covered.
Right.
Yeah. I think it was the one on the boat as well, wasn't it?
Just rambunctious, mean little shits too, you know? I've never met a Siamese cat that was really friendly. It's lucky if the owner is liked at this point, you know?
Well, I quite like this Siamese cat because this Siamese cat was like quite a butch Siamese cat because normally they're like thin and wiry, aren't they?
Yeah.
This one's quite meaty.
Like, what was that? Was it the Dalmatians? Which one was with the We Are Siam?
Oh, that's Lady and the Tramp.
Lady and the Tramp, yeah.
Which apparently they can't use that song anymore because it offends somebody.
Yeah, no, you can't even watch Disney anymore if you're 7 and under without a parent, at least over here. You
can't, yeah, we're fine in this country for now.
It's up there with Caligula.
Yeah.
Shit's getting real.
Well, you know, I see the house fly. I see an elephant fly. I'm offended.
I love the blackbirds. They were the best part.
The crows. I heard a rubber band. I seen a railroad tie. Anyway, we probably could get banned off Spotify or YouTube soon. So
we're gonna get canceled.
Canceled. They already know it. So, Vicky, what are your thoughts about Ling Ling?
Me? Ling Ling, I thought she was a riot. But I mean, I'm just kind of surprised that Samantha's always not supposed to be doing magic. So she incorporates it, she makes this cat into a female. But what jewel was that?
Jewel of the East.
Jewel of the East. So they need a pretty, you know, woman to. But I mean, what were they supposed to do? Take pictures of her and she was supposed to disappear after the fact? I mean, wasn't she going to?
Yeah, they never even showed the results of the campaign, which usually they do. That would be like the end of the episode. I was kind of disappointed because I wanted to see what the actual turnout was.
Yeah. But I mean, she falls for that. Well, she doesn't fall for that guy. Actually, she's all excited about champagne and eating sardines because, you know, she was eating those hors d'oeuvres and they were sardines. And she wanted, I guess, Darren gave her the whole tray and then the tray was empty when he brought it back like 2 seconds later. She ate them all.
I was confused by that because cats are, they're not the biggest eaters though. I don't think a cat would eat.
No, but they love fish though. It's the fish thing.
Oh
isn't
yeah.
It?
The sardine.
Yeah. I know they love fish, but I've never seen a cat, even though they love fish, eat like a whole thing. I've always known them to be more picky than dogs.
So none of this is real, Jess.
Well, actually.
Yeah, well, I know that.
But the interesting thing about cats, though, if a cat's a gobbler or eats a lot, it tends to be because they were starved of the tit when they were little or they didn't get enough food when they were little.
Maybe that was the indication then.
Well, she said that
Ling Ling as a cat looked like it was well fed, so I don't think it was a problem.
Well, she said she was tired of going through garbage cans, and from now on it was going to be sardines and champagne, so martinis and champagne.
She's a good looking garbage cat. Cat, wasn't she? Well groomed for a garbage cat.
Well, she had that fur coat on too, but then she scratched with them. She had a lover's spat with the guy. What was his name?
Wally.
Wally, yeah, Wally fell for.
Yeah, I don't remember. Yeah, you'll never see him again in any other episode.
They fall for everybody like so quick on Bewitched. You ever notice that? They're just dating. And
I know. That's because it's an episode. They have to.
But she scratches them. Well, Samantha puts that, what do you call it? Catnip in her. Mm-hmm. And she starts getting kind of goofy, and then he takes her catnip away, and she gets mad and scratches his face, and she was kind of she was a Siamese cat. That's what a Siamese cat would have done. I loved it though. It was really funny because I think this is the episode that it's just all deteriorates for Gladys. It's all runs downhill after this because shit happens more and more to her, you know, where she sees things and Adna, you know, she just constantly trespassing, trying to find out what's going on.
What's quite interesting, actually, I just finished a book called The Lady from the Black Lagoon, and it's about this woman named Millicent Patrick. And her best friend for her whole life was the guy who plays Abner in Bewitched.
No kidding.
And it was like her homosexual, because he's homosexual apparently in real life. I didn't realize that.
What? Happened.
And he would like, and whenever she needed to be escorted somewhere, it was her. But the interesting thing about Melissa Patrick is that she's kind of been rewritten out of Hollywood, because she was one of the first female animators, and she worked on Dumbo, she worked on Fantasia.
Oh.
And then she got married, and then from there she moved to Universal, where she did this Island Earth, and then she's the one that created the Creature from the Black Lagoon, the look of that. She like designed it and everything like that. And then the person
in the original movie?
Yeah, the original movie. And then what happened was that the guy who was head of makeup got jealous of all the attention she was getting and had her blackballed from Hollywood.
What?
I can't imagine getting blackballed from Hollywood for anything.
Oh, because she was a woman in the time. It's because she was a woman. That's what the whole thing is about, her being, because she was a woman. But I mean, she had a fantastic life. I mean, like her father designed like the Hearst Castle and, you know, and all that sort of stuff.
Wow.
So really good book, but it was quite funny to read all about the guy who plays Abner and how they used to hang out together. And up until he died, you know, they were like the best friends, and she was there when he died. And you know, whenever she needed someone, you know, he'd be the first one there. Whenever he needed something, she'd be there. It was quite interesting. And the thing is, she was a beautiful woman, this Millicent Patrick. But so it was kind of weird, like finishing that, and actually, you know, wrote the review for the book yesterday. And actually, then I started watching it last night, these episodes. And like, so it made me look at Abner totally different. It's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, he doesn't come off that way at all when you're watching the show.
Yeah. You know, there's a lot of men back in the day that, you know, their bread was buttered on a different side. And, you know, back then people just didn't broadcast it, and they just kind of, you know.
I mean, there are some that you always know, which I think next month.
Uncle Arthur. Hello there, Sammy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, because we get an episode with him. That is Uncle Arthur as a driving instructor next month.
Oh yeah, I forgot. Yeah, that's right. I forgot that he plays a different character aside from Uncle Arthur on the show.
I love him. He was like the best. I can't wait.
Paul Lind.
Yeah, he was amazing.
So now when I see Abner, I just think, oh.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, everybody, like, you know, Keith's always been my buddy. It's like girls, just gay friends are just the best. They just are. They really are. Because you can be bitches to each other, you're just not mean. He's just straight up mean to my face. That's what he does.
Well, that's a good thing, though. At least, you know, he's not talking crap about you behind your back.
Oh, he probably does, but I'll hear about it anyway to my face eventually. So it's...
Yeah, so there's no harm.
There's no harm, no foul. Right.
There's no sense. There's no sense slagging people off behind their back.
No.
So it's just more fun that. And plus, it's like at least you know where each other stand. You know.
Oh well, yeah, that's, but that's then there's point, those yeah. that it is fun to, you know.
In England, that's what English people do. They'll be like, if they get upset with you, they'll tell everybody but you.
Yeah, I'd rather hear it straight from the source.
Yeah, precisely. You know? I prefer that as well. I prefer straight up and to the point sort of thing.
We all know. I'll tell you what I think. But
I mean, what I like about Ling Ling, which is quite interesting, is that this is actually based on a short story that has nothing to do with Bewitched, that they actually turned into a Bewitched episode. So I thought that was quite interesting, and this is probably the first time we've had that. The original short story was written by a guy named Anthony Wilson, who wrote a short story in a Harper's Bazaar about a woman.
That makes sense. That makes
about
sense.
A woman, a cat turned into a woman. I thought it was quite interesting that luckily that it wasn't during Ling Ling's mating season, because it might have been a totally different episode.
Yes, it could have been.
She could be like squalling, rubbing herself up against everything. Oh,
I had a friend that had all these cats, and those cats, every time I was over there, were in heat for some reason.
Oh,
you
know,
God
horrible.
Love them all. And then I would leave my purse on the freaking thing, and all the cats would see the purse, and they would just rub all over my purse, like four cats at the same time. No, Jesse's giving me that look. Don't you get, you know, cats?
Wow.
Cats are in heat, you know.
No, I know. Well, it's just so bizarre. You'd think they would, you know, be able to find something else than an inanimate object.
Well, sometimes that's all there's around.
Precisely. And they get it bad. They get it, I think cats are probably the worst when they go in heat.
They are.
And I sit there and say, that's why it's, you know, if you get a cat, make sure you get it fixed.
Oh, God.
Because even males, if you're not careful, males, they spring everywhere and you can't.
Oh, my God. Smell. Yeah. There's nothing worse than a male cat. They'll blankets, pillows. They're just like humans.
Your leg. Oh, so that's good that Ling Ling is amazing. That's so much for so much for Ling Ling.
This is gonna be one of those days, I guess.
But I mean we do get the classic Samantha line, don't we? Where she goes, well.
Well, I like it when he says we need to talk now. Now.
Yeah, that's true. Now.
I love this Darren the best, though, because he gets more upset than the other one. You mm-hmm. know, she's trying to explain to him that the cat used to be a girl.
You know? I mean, I have to sit there and say that I think that Darren has every right to be upset here in this instance, sort of thing. So, I think this is probably the first time that when she's used her magic that Darren has a reason to overact. Because, you know, nothing's worse than your, you know, a colleague falling in love with a cat who's turned into a woman.
Yeah.
Sort of thing.
It would be hard to explain.
And what happens if she gets pregnant? What's going to come out?
Yeah.
Cat people.
Well, she's been turned into a human, though.
Was that the movie? Was it Tommy Knockers?
Yeah, but the thing is, okay, she might be turned into a human, but what kind? This episode always kind of thinking like God, if her and Molly have kids, would they have like little people heads on little cat bodies, or
they would probably be magical beings,
or little cat heads and human bodies,
werecats, or they would just turn out to be werecats.
Werecats. What's baby's first word? Meow. Say mama. Meow.
Well, it was kind of funny, though. She forgot to change her back after dinner was over. And then, like Jesse said, poor Gladys, you know.
I know, it was so weird. I thought Samantha seemed a little more careless than usual, because usually she's on top of that, you know.
Well, so
it's
kind
of weird to see her have a careless,
down, you know. Their life is so busy because of the witchcraft and just the regular life, that just regular human mortal life, you know, that the gap, you know, being bridged. And then you got, at least you don't have Endora fucking things up in this episode for him, you know?
Yeah.
That just goes.
Although I would have loved to see that too.
Well, this brings us to episode 22, Eye of the Beholder. While Darren, Samantha, and Endora are browsing through an antique shop, Endora believes it's time Darren suspected that Samantha may not be as young as her mortal equivalent. Would be. Darren sees a 300-year-old painting, Maid of Salem, which bears a striking resemblance to Samantha, causing him to question her age and their relationship. As Darren contemplates his future with Samantha under these circumstances, Samantha has to figure out a way to save her marriage if the truth truly does come to light. So, Vix, what's your view on the Eye of the Beholder?
Well, I think this humanizes Darren a lot, because, you know, you kind of had to wonder when the show first started, you know, it's like, well, they've known all these historical figures, you know, they talk about certain things. So they've been around for a while. And they're always calling us mortal, so you know that makes them immortal. But, I mean, he's going to age, and she's not going to, which is the whole premise, you know, of the show. And, you know, Darren's, you know, really kind of worried about it. And I don't know, is it vanity so much? Or
I don't know if it's vanity. I think it has to do, what I got is like, you know, they could be happy for a certain set of time. But if he starts aging and she doesn't age at all, and he's like 70 and she still looks... we get an idea what age that she's supposed to be portraying, because he goes, are you 24, 25? So I guess she's supposed to be in her early 20s. Now think about it. Like, he's 70 years old and she still looks 20. I mean, it's going to look like Anna Nicole Smith and that old man that she was dating. Right. You know what I mean? That's how the world's going to look at it, isn't it? It's like, what's this young girl doing with this old guy? So I understood him a little bit here, sort of thing. And I could understand the, you know, the problems that that would present.
Well, it gave him anxiety. This was the episode where he decided to go outside and go gardening, and then Dora's messing with him, you know, and the little girl keeps picking up the wheelbarrow and helping him, and then he goes back to try to pick up the wheelbarrow with the flowers, and he can't lift it. Then you got the girls.
I was about to say, I didn't immediately realize Endora was messing with him. Like, that wheelbarrow cannot be heavy, because I've done landscaping before. I've used wheelbarrows full of heavier things than pot, you know, things of flowers. I'm like, that can't be that heavy. Like, he has to be either, I don't know, maybe he's being a hypochondriac about getting older or something and experiencing all these ailments or something. Cause I didn't know what was going on. And then all of a sudden you see Endor behind a tree cack. I'm like, oh, of course.
That's you got the little girl. Where do you want it? You know, she's pushing the wheelbarrow.
Yeah, that girl, Kimmy, will never come on any episode ever again.
Yeah, I know. That's what I was going to say. It's like, Kimmy, who we'll never see again. But she's free enough to come in and out of your backyard. It will.
Yeah,
exactly. But I think it just shows Darren's anxiety and stuff, because you don't, because, well, it's just one of those things that they have to overcome, I guess, you know, is this marriage. I mean, like, we always talk about, you know, mixed marriages and stuff. And I mean, I'm sure at this time, you know, not so much the mixed marriage, but he's asking his friend. Well, his friend at the bar doesn't seem to help him much. He's just talking about, you know, well, I guess it'd be helpful if your wife was around during the Revolutionary War. You could ask her about history and stuff like that. Yeah. He didn't seem very helpful at all. And that's another guy I don't think we're ever going to see again.
Actually, we actually seen him before, though. He's appeared like in earlier episodes.
First episode.
He's the drinking buddy.
He's a barber.
I'm not sure. I mean, he seems to know Darren's
name.
He's
in the first episode when Darren realizes that she's a witch, like right after she tells him, and he goes downstairs and, you know, he's doing the same, you know, funny shtick that he's doing in this episode where he about different, assuming Darren's problem, then Darren after that is replying, talking about his actual problem. And then the bartender's looking at him like he's crazy, like, you should see my wife.
He goes, I think my wife is an old witch. You know, he's talking to the bartender about it. Yeah. And, you know, that's just a loaded, you know, statement as it is. Mm-hmm. I do notice, though, that and then you got Larry Tate, you know, and Darren's kind of depressed because, you know, she's messing with his head, and Dora is at least a little bit, and that picture of Samantha. But you got Larry Tate, and Larry Tate is such a, I don't know, he's just a lovable lech, I guess, because he goes, leave the door open, you know, because it's getting stuffy in here because there's this bombshell of a model out there waiting to be interviewed, you know.
And yeah, then, who's just awkwardly posing out there and like.
Awkwardly posing. I know she's got her hand on her hip.
It's ridiculous. I'm like, she's still standing there, like, after their conversation.
She kind of reminded me of Angelina Jolie when she had her leg out. That one picture that everybody was dogging on her for.
I mean, this one, I mean, she had her tits out and her ass out. And
Yeah.
Her hand in her hip.
Yeah.
And then, and then you had Darren. And then he asked Larry, he goes, well, what if the man's 75 and the woman's 25? He goes, I'd say that's indecent. But there he is leering at the model at the same time being indecent. So Larry would not have been a real good candidate for the Me Too movement.
No, not at all. Not at all. He would be the mascot of, like, the man not to be.
I mean, Larry would be canceled.
And this episode, we also got to see that there are other people working at this agency as well, didn't we?
No, that's true. That's true. That happens once in a great while on this show.
And it was a high rise, too, because they showed an outdoor
view
of the building. Mm-hmm. So we know he works in a high rise.
Yeah, I thought that was cool about the past few episodes that we watched this time. There was a few more more risque kind of elements to it, and then more expansive elements to it that you didn't see in any other episodes, because they're always so, I guess, ground bound to Darren in his office, just really his office, and then Samantha back at home, or maybe she goes somewhere with her mother, but it's never, you know, it never really varies too much. It's kind of interesting to see variation in some of the set pieces and places that they get to explore in these episodes.
Yeah.
I found it, I mean, I mean, it was quite handy for that old couple to be having that conversation when he's
talking. Yeah, exactly.
So wonderful now as you did back then. I mean, you know what? I'll always ask Scott. Scott's like, do I look all right? And he'll always say yes. If he said no, you know, I go, just be honest. I'm not going to kill you. But I always tell him, you know, if you choose your words wisely, because you got to sleep sometime, you know. But I mean, the old couple were helpful. And then this kind of makes them, well, they got a park now. We know they've got the park. And then Darren's parked the car and you know, she's worried the police come, you know, or the police are out looking for, or just trying to figure out why his car is sitting there. But then we find out, you know, she said that they think he's being kind of a cad because he's got a nice little wife at home. And there he is smooching this little blonde thing, you know, on the park.
Yeah, that was funny.
But they always find their way back. I mean, they always seem to have to endure some kind of an obstacle or a problem or
marital challenge.
Some kind of challenge in each episode. But
and this was Dora's fault this time. This wasn't Dora's fault this time.
But well, see, in a way, though, I can understand why Dora did it. It's not because the thing is,
yeah, I definitely understand
because it's almost like we also find out they've been married for over a year now.
Yeah,
yeah.
She just says that. So
I know, and they're still learning things, like things you learn on like first dates. Like, what did they do? I mean, we know they made out during every date, and that's pretty much it. They didn't do much talking because during the episodes after their marriage, they're still learning things about each other. Mostly Darren is learning things about Samantha that I feel like should have been talked about.
Like her age.
Like on their first few
dates. Do you think back then the culture was to just find somebody and get married? I mean, did you not date for a while?
That's definitely implied.
Yeah, I mean, it is implied that they kind of like met on a Sunday, married on a Thursday. It does have that kind of feel to it.
It seemed like a real world.
Because let's face it, I mean, Samantha didn't even tell her. I mean, you know, you see her mom floating in and out of her life at will all the time. So obviously, I don't know where Andorra was when these two people were dating until they got married because she wasn't around. So it must have been very short. She's flying in once a week.
At least. You know?
And then she doesn't even know that she's married when, you know, in the first episode. So
to a mortal, nonetheless.
Yeah. But I mean, there are a couple. Couple problems I do have with this episode, though, because was that picture of Samantha?
Well,
They never explained that.
Well, you just assume it was, I think.
But then it's implied that it's implied later on that it wasn't necessarily. It was just a likeness of her, and it no one explains whether it is a portrait of her or whether it's just a likeness.
But it's kind of it looks
confusing because even Samantha.
It's an antique.
Yeah, because even Samantha looks at it and kind of gasps and is like, oh, this is why he thinks this. Like, she didn't like say, oh, this is a picture of me. Oh, this woman looks so much like me. Like, there's no clarification. Yeah. I mean, maybe it doesn't matter that much, but I feel like it kind of does. I would have liked to have known if that was supposed to be her, because we do know later on there are Salem episodes and they are witches, and witches have always been tethered to Salem. So you got to wonder.
Yeah, and because, you know, another thing, you know, maybe it wasn't her picture to start with in the picture anyway. Maybe Andara just imposed her picture face in there.
Exactly. That's what I'm thinking happened.
Yeah, but then because even the way that Samantha acted to it, it's like, well, was it her or wasn't that her? So it was kind of weird because you didn't really get any strong sense of that sort of thing.
No.
And another thing is
why I do think that some...
What?
Oh, sorry. I was going to say, that's why I think that they tried to insinuate that Andorra was the one that imposed her face on it, just ripped it out of thin air or something, because she was the one that directed it in his direction. So she could have just, you know, created that image to stir up, you know, a problem for Darren.
Again, we don't get Andorra doing more than one spell, though, do we? Because I think, this is what's kind of bizarre. Because normally if they... Yeah.
I mean, well, she made the squirrels talk.
Yeah, but no, but what I'm saying is that the thing is with her is like, can she do more than one thing at a time? Like, can she just go boom, picture, move at the same time? Or does she have to go boom, change the picture, then move it? You know, and then another spell to make it move? Or so I guess we have that as well. Because she should have gone bing, bing, sort of thing, and then as it's moving, and then moves it a second time. So, or can she just do it once, this one, bing, sort of thing, and it just does it all in one go?
Yeah. I mean, I know
one why stop. Would she have done that, though?
What?
Why would she have even put that picture there, though?
Well, it's to forge the fact that Samantha needs to have a conversation with Darren and what it means to be married to an immortal.
Yeah, and if you remember in the very beginning of the episode, Samantha and her mother are having a moment, and her mother's trying to explain, I think, something that happened in the past and like their heritage and stuff like that, but Samantha doesn't really want to hear it, and Darren's like gesturing like we have to go or something like that. So Samantha's basically like, I can't have this relationship with you as it was. Like, it has to be different now because I'm married to Darren. So I think she does that because she feels kind of
so
hurt by it.
So you think Endora was the catalyst for all this? Or the protagonist? Or
Yeah, she was. But I do think it was not from an evil stance. I think it was for that you need to have, you know, it's a bit like, you know, if definitely you marry not, someone, yeah. You're keeping something hidden and your parents go, you need to have a conversation about this before, yeah. You know, sort of thing. And I think it's more like that than, you know, let's get
to be out upset, in the open. Sort of yeah. I'm surprised they're not out in the open yet. Like, I mean, you dropped the biggest bomb on him. They're like, everything else is quite small compared to that, I think. And right. If you're a witch, you talk about being immortal all the time, or your mother-in-law talks about being immortal, like, you'd think that would just be obvious. I'm kind of surprised Darren took this long to figure this out, you know, just because, I mean, he knows Endora is quite old, thousands and thousands of years old, assuming because she has showed her age, and Samantha is still probably a couple thousand, maybe, who knows?
Well, they talk about knowing, Helen.
Well, yeah, that's the, another couple episodes, yeah. We find out a little bit more of that as well.
Yeah,
we?
Well, so they've been around for a while.
And another thing is that Samantha still dodges the question by the end of the episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. We still don't
She
know
never
how
fully
she
answers. She never divulges like full truth. There's never a moment of like, I'm going to tell you everything. And that kind of frustrated me too. Because
well, maybe
like,
the writers don't know how to explain it to us.
That's true too, I suppose. But yeah. I do feel like, I don't know. It would have been
still
nice.
Feel like, it still feels like she avoided the question though. Yeah. I mean, I like this episode, answered. But you do feel like there's a lot of stuff that's been kind of, it wasn't.
Yeah, it's kind of short. You're shortchanged.
Yeah,
and it wasn't thoroughly thought out as if you had with the other episodes. It just seems
right.
Like it was a good episode, but it wasn't really.
I feel like it started on a really high note, and then kind of slowly, kind of the rhythm kind of became more slow, and I kind of was like, okay, what's going on? This is kind of boring. Like Darren's walking around in the park, and Samantha has no real clue what's going on, and so it just the rhythm of it kind of. Starts to become really slow, even though it starts off really strong, and I thought it was going to be a really strong episode, because I honestly didn't remember this episode from my prior watching, probably because it's not my most favorite, I guess, but
I didn't remember this episode.
I do feel like it slowed down quite a bit, and I lost a little, yeah.
Well, it's almost
like I just lost a little bit of interest in the later part.
And the prologue seemed strong. That seemed like the strongest bit before, you know, the prologue before the opening credits.
Exactly.
And the prologue was fantastic. I mean, those two and the mom, you know, Endora and Samantha to have that conversation, and the antique dealer getting really upset with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, like, oh, this is a Louis the 14th rocket chair.
They're going, I love that scene.
Pennsylvania Dutch. And it comes from Europe. Pennsylvania.
They probably couldn't put too much over on them because I'm sure that even before she decided to choose her mortal life, they had the finer things in life, so they would know about such things. So,
yeah.
Well,
and
I mean,
part of me wants
they were
to
there
see
when
more
the finer moment. Things in life were built. They were there when they were being built.
Yeah, that's true. I wish I could see more of that dynamic between Endora and Samantha a little bit more, because I do like that. I like being able to see them bond and actually enjoy each other's company, not just Endora always, you know, or being portrayed as someone who meddles in their relationship. Because I really think Endora just wants a relationship with her daughter and doesn't want to be kept from being herself. Like, no one would want that. I think that's a fairly reasonable wish, you know, for
well,
someone
Darren
to want to be themselves.
Darren is a little hardcore on changing Samantha. You have to admit. Yeah. He knew what he was marrying.
Yeah, and he really just pushes that element out of her life. And I think that's a little harsh, especially towards Endora, because I think Endora would fully appreciate him if he just let Samantha and her let be herself in their in his presence. You know, I really don't think that there would be more to it than that. I just think she wants to be herself, free to be, you know, a witch. I don't even think she would make a scene in front of other people, but in front of Darren, I think she should be able to express.
I think she would make a scene if she was in front of stupid people.
Yeah.
It's like if someone's really annoying, I think she'd
love that.
Just because she's that kind of person.
That would be a fun show.
She kind of would be like the cat amongst the pigeons if the person was annoying. I think she'd do something. But yeah. I think other than that, I think she knows. I mean, you know, let's face it. I mean, she acted fantastically well with Darren's parents, didn't she?
Exactly.
I mean, though you know, she can be, you know, fantastically, personal with people if she needs to be, and you know, and everyone that ever meets her, when they don't, you know, don't know who she is, she knows how to wow anyone, doesn't she? So,
yeah.
But yeah, I had to sit there and say though, I've never seen such an ill-fitting coat in my life than what Samantha's wearing.
Refresh my memory. Was it the big beige coat?
It has like has a button on it. It just kind of like hangs on like a circus tent.
That's like something you wear with, like, as a maternity coat or something. I thought maybe that was from her maternity days or something.
Well, you know, back then and still now, like women to accentuate their figures, even if you're, you know, a little more beefy. But if you wore things that went down like from a V shape, that was a style because it did hide curves and whatnot. And they still do that. Some dresses just go straight. Like that.
Well, if you watch Dark Shadows and look at the clothes that Victoria Winters wears, like they all wear the same kind of shaped outfits.
Yeah,
well, they're very
like wear a belt, babe.
But
another thing I guess another thing to remember is that Elizabeth Montgomery has got pregnant during the first season, so maybe it's to cover that up.
Yeah. They probably did when you think about it.
So maybe that's what about. Well, we'll find out. I guess we need to look at she's carrying a lot of baskets around in front of her. That's normally what they do.
Well, I know soap operas, they put you behind stuff, you know, position
sofas,
big clothes. So.
So this brings us to episode 23, Red Light, Green Light.
Yeah.
The mayor, Dan Tobin, ignoring his constituents' request to have a traffic light installed at a busy intersection, needs some of Samantha's witchcraft to convince him otherwise. Vic Tayback from Mel's Diner from the TV show Alice appears as the mayor's chauffeur. So, Jess, what are your thoughts of Red Light, Green Light?
Hysterical.
I thought this was a really good episode, too. It was just totally different than any other episode. There was almost a movie quality to it compared to traditional episodes. It starts off really smoothly. It immediately lets you in on what's going on, what it's about. You finally get to see what it's like at a really busy morning on Morning Glory Circle when everyone's trying to do their morning
class. That Morning Glory Circle was like a cul-de-sac, not a throughway. So I was kind of confused.
Yeah, I know. I was kind of confused too. But like, I guess you don't argue with it if you're looking at it. But yeah, I thought it was really interesting to see like them in the mayor, you know, the, what do you call it?
Town hall.
I guess the town meeting. Town hall. And then the meeting with all the neighbors. I mean, I thought it was really cool dynamics that we haven't seen in the show yet that were really cool. So it was definitely more experimental.
Well, they're actually
it felt more experimental.
And then you got
exactly.
And they need the traffic light. And again, you have Endora wanting to engage and help her daughter by going all over the world and getting different traffic lights in her living room.
Hysterical.
So Gladys can see all these traffic lights in the living room,
which makes you wonder. Why the hell has Samantha not gotten like curtains or anything yet? Something. She knows Gladys has
mini blinds.
Anything. They had mini blinds, didn't they, back then?
Honestly, no curtain on the windows.
But then again, you know, Samantha's like, frick, you know, like if you're gonna mess with me, I'm gonna mess with you back.
She really so, doesn't.
And why is Gladys? I mean, who comes to your house and peers through your windows before they knock on your door all the time? Can you imagine how annoying that would be if your neighbor every time they came over, they're like looking in your windows?
Well, she's she lives across the street.
You can't tell me Samantha never once notices.
Well, she technically lives across the street, but she's always looking over the fence. You ever notice that?
Yeah.
And she's constantly trespassing. And she is the nosiest busybody going ever and before and since, you know,
Well, she doesn't have a job. She doesn't have kids to take care of, and her husband's home all the time. There's nothing for her to do except for.
Well, he doesn't even seem like he's so complacent when it comes to her, too. You know, it's just like
It's like he's almost like, I've seen that. I've been there. I've got the T-shirt. So I'm just not even fazed by
it. He's not fazed by anything. He just wants to be retired in peace and read his newspaper.
They had some fantastic scenes though, like when they're at the little meeting at the guy's house.
Yeah,
and she goes, "Why don't we lay down in front of the traffic?" She goes, "Oh, yeah, lay down in front of the traffic."
I know, he's so callous. He really is. He just doesn't have any feelings.
No, but he's even. I mean, but the thing is, he's like that with everyone, which is quite interesting because Yeah, but you even see him like at the town hall, and then he goes, "Oh, and you, sir," and he stands up. He goes, "And you, my constituent," because I didn't vote for you.
Yeah, I know.
I voted for the other guy.
But that guy, and then think of that, the politician is a smarmy, slippery kind of guy too, that's just there. You know, he probably doesn't do jack, you know, and I mean, you can't, and it is hard to get a traffic light. That is not a lie. We need a traffic light. Two blocks down, and we cannot.
Well, now you know what to do. Now you know what to do.
I need a bloody traffic light. Lay down in the middle of the road, huh? Nobody cares.
But if you notice, this is also the first episode where Darren is happy with Samantha using magic.
Yeah,
yeah, that's true. He didn't say anything about it. It's just whenever it's convenient for. That's not true because he didn't get anything out of it.
I think because this was such an important thing for her that he was willing to back her, and that was quite nice to have that. You know, it's like because this is so important to you, we'll let it go, sort of thing.
But yet, her mom's still pushing the traffic lights, and she liked the old one.
So hysterical, and then she finally comes home with a Russian, I think it's Russian, the guy, the police
officer. No, it's a Bobby.
What is that?
An English.
It's English?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. And I thought that was hysterical. But it also made me wonder, like, I know it's a sitcom and stuff, but you kind of wonder how their magic works and functions sometimes, because they always say things that kind of make you wonder how it works, like what their capabilities are, because there was something, I can't remember what it was now, but I think she wasn't able to conjure up.
She had to go look for the
traffic light. Yeah, she had to go to different places.
Well, she
and,
wanted
like,
to go shop for the perfect traffic light that had elegance or something to it. And then she saw the London Bobby and brought him back. And she put that poor man has a family somewhere, and she's got a spell on him. And he just
What about that traffic? Because she's taking traffic lights off of busy street corners.
Exactly.
Yeah, that too.
That she's not capable?
I don't think they can conjure up stuff from their imagination. I think it has to come from somewhere. So therefore, if I decide that I'm going to conjure up, I don't know, a Siamese cat, that Siamese cat is someone else's Siamese cat somewhere. So that person will be without a Siamese cat, so I can have a Siamese cat. So I think it must be
also,
that way.
Yeah. And that, I think, goes back to like with the ideologies, I think, within magic, is that when you do something, something's always taken away from that. It's like energy that is like give and take. You can't just whip something out of nothing and expect no consequences. Like,
And the question is how long does it last as well?
Exactly, yeah.
I don't know how long it lasts. Does it last forever? Is it only for now? Does it last a day, 3 days?
I don't know if like the people who made the show knew much about magic or if it was just coincidental that it kind of just works that way. I doubt that they
really had a focus group with pagans or Wiccans or Gardnerians or any other traditional sect of witchcraft. So.
Well, there doesn't seem to be any whatchamacallit. There hasn't been any ground rules set yet as far as
Really. Just hints and glimpses of what, you know, and how their magic functions, I guess.
I mean, I have to sit there and say that it's also what's quite nice about this episode is that even though Adora's trying to help and Samantha's like, no, mom, you need to like take a back seat, stuff like this. And then the last time she brings one in before they win their case sort of thing is that, and she goes, mom, if you really want to help, come back or whatever like that. And Adora comes back and then they're at the town meeting and, you know, obviously they're not going to get the traffic light. And Samantha pretty much foresees this. And then she freezes the crowd and mom goes, are you ready, dear? Yes, I'm ready. And that it's like, okay. It's like, you know, which is then Adora's like even willing to, you know, it's like, she's there. Because the whole thing, even though she's, you know, doing this, it's there for the love of her daughter.
She wants to help. She you know, she gets that voice, I can't do the voice, where she goes, and you do want me to help you now. And, you know, she gets that dark voice, that Adora voice, and where she feels she's kind of hurt or she's being witch-shamed or something because she wants to help. So she goes and finds all these... Of course, Gladys is looking and seeing all the traffic lights. And then she sees the Bobby, you know, that she's got the railroad traffic light, the railroad thing.
And what is it with Darren, like, just nibbling and everything?
Oh, I know. Was he hungry or something? He kept eating the chocolate or whatever it was.
And then the hors d'oeuvres.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't know what they were. I didn't know what
I thought
know
it was some kind of candy or something.
Yeah.
But
she's looking at him like,
he was hungry. But didn't they start that episode off with where she was cutting the ham because she needed to eat early because she was she was deboning that ham.
Yeah.
So she would have to, she was, you know, so I guess I was thinking just because, you know how men are, you know, they're hungry when they come home and he worked late. So he was probably picking. That's what went through my head because I know.
Yeah.
But then even before he was like nibbling on the hors d'oeuvres. He wouldn't stop on those either. She's like, oh, come on, Darren.
He's a growing boy. He's hungry.
They also did that with Abner and Gladys's cookies.
That was Abner eating the cookie because she borrowed the cookie cutters.
No, that's what I said. I said they did that with Abner too and Gladys's cookies. So they were doing it with both of the men.
He was eating copious amounts of cookies. He wouldn't leave her cookie alone. She was afraid to leave him in the house.
I think he only gave up one cookie to shut her up at one point. Oh,
that's because
let's have a cookie.
Yeah, that's because they were peering in the window. She's always got him trespassing too. So he can go and look in the window. And after a while, just like, you know, I often wonder, does anybody ever feel sorry for Gladys? Or she's such a busybody, nobody feels sorry for her.
I'm beginning to feel bad for her because it's becoming such a routine thing that even now I think she questions her own sanity that she willingly will take amounts of medicine or whatever. Like these days, you know what
it is. Some kind
these
of...
days they'd be giving her brownies, if you know what I'm saying, with some green in it.
I think she'd probably be on crack.
They used to give it out. It begins with a B. They used to give it out a lot.
Barbiturates.
That wasn't a barbiturate, but it was habit forming. They stopped giving it to people right around when Justin was born because I remember hearing them. It begins with F. Oh God, what is that stuff? It's to calm you down, but it's really stout stuff. I don't even think they make it anymore.
But I could just. Let's face it, by the time, you know, after about 2 or 3 years living next door to Stevens, I mean, she'd just be a raving alcoholic, wouldn't she?
Yeah.
Oh, God. Can you imagine? I wouldn't be knocking it. I'd be wanting it.
But then again, that's what you get for sticking your nose in other people's business.
Always. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, that is. I mean, some people just, you know, they are the biggest busybodies and they just cannot help themselves. I mean, look at Facebook. How many people's accounts you block somebody and they go in and make another account or use another account just because they got to know what's going on. You block me, but I know you watching, you know, kind of thing.
But I have to, I mean, you know, I have to, you know, my hats go off to Gladys and Abner, because, you know, they almost, every time you see them, they almost steal the show.
Phenobarbital, that's what it was.
Oh, yeah, Phenobarbital.
Okay. I don't know why.
By the way.
Phenobarbital.
P-H-E-N-O.
She would be messed up all the time if they were giving her phenobarb. That's all I could say.
Yeah. So, but, so that brings us to our next.
Make sure not to put that in the podcast.
And this brings us to episode 24, which is which? To assist her daughter in a dress fitting, Andorra transforms herself into a double Samantha, while at the fitting, Robert Fraser, played by Ron Randall, a young writer, becomes smitten with her, and Andorra decides to convert with him as Samantha. Meanwhile, Gladys Kravitz thinks Samantha is having a secret affair. There are further complications when it turns out that Bob is an old friend of Darren's. Andorra shows up as Samantha at a dinner that Darren, Sam, and Bob are having. Bob now believes Andorra is Sam's twin. So, Vix, what are your thoughts of which is which?
This is really bitchy on Andorra's part. She didn't have to mess with this poor guy. But then again, she didn't know that he was Darren's friend, probably.
I think she liked him.
I think she kind of liked him, too. I mean, who doesn't, when you get older, want some younger dude or whatever to flirt with you?
And stuff? Seem that young.
Everybody
to
likes
you,
to be flirted with, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's the problem with some of these shows. I mean, how old is he supposed to be? He looked about 40.
He's supposed to be 40, yeah. But he looks older.
He looked closer in age.
I thought he was Darren's friend, so I thought he probably was supposed to be like around Darren, how old Darren's supposed to be.
Well, he had gray temples. I guess people get gray in their 30s.
I'm getting grays already. I'm not even in my 30s.
You got to calm down, Jess. We told you before the show, you need to chill.
Sorry, I don't smoke pot, so I don't have anything to calm me down.
I could mail you some.
Oh, yeah. We'll both be rested.
But anyway, though, but Andorra, she's really kind of funny in this one, because, I mean, let's face it, she knows Samantha's beautiful. And then when she's in the dress fitting, she thinks the back is way too conservative, and it's already exposing a lot. And then she wants
the front.
And the front. She wants it down. What'd she say? Cut it down two smidges. Two smidges. That's like quite a bit. That's a cleavage line. So she's a little more out there than her daughter, who is probably seemingly conservative anyway.
But even Andorra wears quite conservative outfits. I've never seen Andorra wear.
But this is for her young daughter, though. She was taking that dress before.
I suppose. Then,
so this guy is hitting on her, and she gets rid of the old guy, you know, who's the father of the author who hit on her
you
first.
Should be ashamed.
Who should be ashamed of himself. But then she goes and does the same thing with the other guy and takes him up on it. And of course they're having lunch and schmoozing, and Gladys happens to be in the same restaurant. You know, how big is this town? Okay. We got a circle that needs.
Well, they probably only have one Chinese restaurant.
Okay. To be fair.
I'm thinking
California, isn't it?
Well, I don't think they wander too far away from their little town, wherever they are. Morning Glory.
And did you notice the little touch? Her hair is up kind of in a beehive, but they're in a Chinese restaurant, and she has the little Chinese hair stick.
Yeah.
The little tassel thingies in her hair. So they paid attention to detail on this one to her look different than Samantha, yet be Samantha.
But you know,
the eyeshadow was still there and the cat eyes, though.
So. But you know, the funny thing about it is that you're watching it, and Andorra, you know, Agnes Moorhead's only in two scenes, two and a half scenes. The rest of it is Elizabeth Montgomery playing both parts, and she does a fantastic job.
Well, we know she can pull that off in later episodes.
She even does she even pronounces certain words the same way her mother does, which is like the same way Agnes Moorhead does, which is really, really interesting, because she doesn't do it all the time, but there's certain times when it's necessary that she does it, and it just fits so perfectly.
Well, I think it's funny how, you know, Samantha's character starts to have a little bit of a Darren fit. She goes, "Mother, you didn't. His name is what?" You know, and it just happens to be. But again, this guy, she's been hanging out with this dude all week. They're going to the horse races. They're going to the theater. They're doing this. They're doing that.
Amusement park.
Yeah, the amusement park, they've been hanging. You know, how close are these guys actually?
For 4 days and four nights.
Yeah.
Things are getting real serious over there.
You know, and they're, you know, yeah, this poor guy thinks, you know, that he's hitting it off with this woman. And then he sees the other Samantha, the real Samantha, and he starts nibbling on her neck and she's ready to call the police on him, you know?
That was, I love that scene. It's so funny.
And Bob wants to marry Andorra.
Yeah, and Adora's like going to break it off.
Can you imagine?
I guess. But did you like the flair of her clothing? I mean, she sets her apart from her daughter as Samantha.
I thought there's Samantha the housewife, and this is Gilda, you know, from Rita Hayworth, you know, when she's in that black tight dress with the, you know, the candle and the cape around her when she shows up at the dinner party, like
the dinner party get up. Oh my God. I mean, that was
really good. That's probably the best outfit.
Even for this decade, the best outfit
she wore.
Well, yeah. God, people used to dress so fine back then, you know. Now we're worried about man buns and rompers, you know.
Yeah, both genders. Both
I'm gonna get canceled for that. I'm sorry, everybody. I love man buns actually.
Yeah. And
rompers.
Someone does.
Yeah, but both genders can get away with wearing rompers and man buns, or just buns in general. So there's no definition.
Well, Jason Momoa can pull off the man bun quite well.
True. But
I said there say that. But then again, I mean, you know. But then if you do look at the way Andorra dresses when she's Andorra.
Yeah.
There is that flair for style and fashion and everything like that. I mean, yeah, it's not as skin tight as what we saw her when she, you know, when she's being Samantha.
Right.
But it's that's what's quite good about it, because they were able to, and that's what the show is like. You're kind of watching it and you're kind of like, you know, seeing all this. And that's where you realize how clever the show really is. Mm-hmm. Because when Samantha, you know, Elizabeth Montgomery becomes the Agnes Moorhead and Dora character, and the eyeshadow, and the way, even like underneath the eye with the eyeliner, the way that's done, and they play close attention to that, and the way that she's acting, and the way that, and the whole body mannerisms of this, and the way that they dress her as well, is the way that Andorra would dress if she was that younger person.
And she's still wise, but
did you notice that they, there's something when Elizabeth Montgomery is talking as Andorra, it's like they modified her voice a little bit. Her voice sounded a bit different. They're doing something modifying with the.
Yeah.
So she must have had to come in and dub it afterwards or something.
Right. I really enjoyed this episode because Andorra is so playful, and you can see she's still just a girl that wants to have fun, you know, even though she's what, 6,000 years old or whatever. How old? We had the question of age earlier.
60,000 years. I don't know
how old. God knows how old, part of the cosmos or whatever. How are witches born, you know?
But another thing, we do get Andorra in some fantastic things, like when they're in bargain shopping and all the women are like that. She's like, oh, this is like hell. And I know what she's feeling because I hate shopping. When I go shopping, even
that looked like Filene's basement in Boston. And that's the way that place used to really be. I mean, it was bad. And then she put the 90% off sign. It's like everybody would jam over there for something like that.
Samantha, look over there. 90% off.
90% off over there. Yeah. Gladys is there and she's trying to rip the dress out of Samantha's hand. I seen it first, you know, kind of thing. And then she's
like, it's you.
Yeah. So she's just a nasty person all the way around sometimes, I guess.
Well, let's face it. I mean, you know, what we've seen of Gladys up to here, I mean, where are we at episode 24? And we've seen 24 episodes. And in that point, Gladys is featured in quite a few of them. And we do know that the people, like the committees that Gladys is on, they don't seem to like her. It doesn't seem like anyone likes
Gladys.
They treat
her really bad.
Yeah. So, I mean, she's kind of bullied everywhere around, isn't she?
Yeah.
But then again, she has a nasty way about her. I mean, look at when she had at the baseball game with her nephew.
Yeah.
You know, and she was, you know, she got a bit.
I know, she's calling little kid names. Like, who does that?
What did she call him? That's going to drive me nuts.
Marshmallow Mathers.
Yeah, marshmallow.
I mean, so she does have this evil thing to her. And then when we saw it again with this episode where she grabbed her dress. And to be honest, if it wasn't Samantha, she would have ripped it out of her hand and running away with it.
I've had people actually do that to me in department stores, but that's just...
Isn't that called Black Friday?
No, that's yeah, right? Flat screen TVs also during riots.
I go internet Black Friday shopping. I don't do the in-store thing. I went once in my entire life. I'm like, yeah, I'm not doing this again.
I hate going to Walmart.
Not worth it.
I'd rather go have a pap smear than go to the Greenville Walmart anytime. I just don't want to go. It's that bad.
I hate shopping anyway. It's just like shopping's not my forte.
Mm. So. I could care less. If I can't get it online, I don't need it.
I mean, even in the prologue where Samantha's trying to describe what bargain shopping is, and Doran's just like, oh dear girl.
Yeah, I know.
Why? I don't understand. Why do you want to do this? Yeah. Why?
If you and that's what
mortal,
that's
it's a mortal
joys
pleasure.
Of mortal women.
It's a mortal,
mortal women's pleasure.
Yeah, because that way, if she says,
what did she say?
Splurge.
She's and Dora said something in response to that made me laugh so hard. I don't remember what it was though. It was something
she's
kind of along the lines
come
of
back. She's always good.
Oh, I know, they're so funny.
I also found we find a little bit more about Endora's age when she said that she knew Helen of Troy and that Helen of Troy couldn't. She didn't launch ships. She sunk ships and she was knock-kneed.
Knock-knees. Yeah, she wasn't that beautiful, apparently. But if look, that I mean, I've seen coins because I collect Roman coins when I get my hands on them. But I mean, when you look at stuff that's apparently women back then, you know, they had the nose thing going on. Like Cleopatra.
They were Italian, weren't they?
Yeah. Spartan, Greek. Well, they're not much difference, Greek, Italian, you know. I don't got it that bad.
Egyptian.
But no, their Ptolemies were actually Macedonian, though. So technically they weren't Egyptian, but they were all, you know, breeding with this one and that one because the Mediterranean was the known world. So,
yeah. Well, they were the world for a while, weren't they?
Yeah. Yeah. So. But it's kind of funny because, you know, Cleopatra, if you see the coins with her, she's just got a really, you know, prohibiscus. And her, you know, she wasn't really like Nefertiti beautiful, you know?
Yeah, but she could have been like...
And the Ptolemies all married their sister, their brother, their father, their mother. So,
I mean, Cleopatra could have been like, you know, like there's Catherine Zeta-Jones who has like no sex appeal whatsoever. She's very beautiful, but no sex appeal. And then you got Susan Sarandon, who's not, she's not pretty, but she's got so much sex appeal.
Yeah,
So Cleopatra could have been more... That she might not have been much to look at, but maybe she'd just been exuding.
We were having a conversation about that. What was that movie with Tarantino and Clooney, vampires? Oh, Dust Till Dawn.
Yeah.
Who? What was her name? I can't recall.
Salma Hayek.
That was probably one of the most seductive things you will ever see, where she's dancing with that snake before she's putting all that vodka in Quentin Tarantino's mouth.
Actually,
with her foot.
I love Salma Hayek, but if you ever want to play a drinking game with Salma Hayek, watch the movie Dogma. And every time she opens her mouth, if you can't understand her, take a drink. You'll be drunk before she's even off the screen.
She was great, though, in that. And then she wanted to be...
I love her.
She wanted to be the ugly whatever, make it look like a snake. That I was watching... why am I having a... Trevino. He was making...
Tarantino.
He makes all the... Yeah.
Tom Savino, yeah.
I can't talk today. But I was watching a special on him and how he made all that stuff, you know.
Oh, yeah, because there's a documentary on Shudder about him, isn't there?
Yeah, it's really good. It's worth watching if anybody's into that kind of thing like me. But he did really good at job with blowing up heads and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah. Friday the 13th, part 1 and 4 and Dawn of the Dead.
Return of the Dead. Return of the Living Dead.
Did that as well. Yeah, Day of the Dead.
Yeah, he's fantastic.
But I mean, I think Witch is, I don't know. I thought the whole thing was just charming. It's just, it made me laugh. It made me smile. I enjoyed it from beginning to end. It doesn't dull. It doesn't let down at all.
Except the guy at the end, Rundora is going to break it off with him as Samantha's twin sister. I mean, what are these people just probably never come back into their life again? Or, oh, how's your sister? You know, how's your cousin? How's your whatever?
Exactly.
Well, I mean, we know that Darren and
I know. That's why I wish it wasn't just a sitcom.
Well, but another thing, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, you know, this is before social media. So obviously, Bob, though he's an old friend of Darren's, didn't know that Darren was even married, and they've been married for over a year. So obviously, they don't see each other very often anyway, it seems like. You know, because he did say that. He goes, oh, I didn't know you were married. Obviously, and then, you know, two episodes before this, we found out that they've been married over a year. So obviously, Darren's best friend, Bob, they haven't seen each other for over a year and a bit now, have they? So
did
they go to college together or something?
Did Darren and Samantha just get eloped?
I don't know. I mean, the thing is, though, I mean, you have to remember, this is before social media. So if you wanted to keep in touch with people and you didn't make phone calls, because phone calls are freaking expensive, you'd have to take, I mean, you have to take out a second mortgage if you wanted to have a 10-minute conversation with someone long distance in this day, in those day and ages.
Yeah, but when you didn't contact, when you think about,
so you have to write letters.
So when you think about it, who even went to their wedding? Nobody, because Darren's parents had met Samantha. Samantha's parents had met Darren. Who would have gone to their wedding?
They eloped, didn't they?
Yeah, I guess so. I didn't really think about that till now. It was so quick. Like everything happened so quick. It showed scenes of them, you know, dating, really just making out, you know, in different locations. Then Darren putting a ring on her finger, and they were married in the hotel. And that's kind of where the show really takes off, and you start to see some plots. But I guess they did just get eloped, because no one.
I think she just moved into Darren's flat, didn't she, or apartment before they bought the house.
I guess so. Yeah, happened real fast.
So as far as Darren having, you know, Bob, I don't think Bob was a best friend. It's like an old mate sort of thing that they see whenever he's in town.
Yeah.
So I guess it all depends how often Bob's in town. And to be honest, it's like, he was a novelist, but I'm not sure how many books he's producing, because it didn't seem like he was selling well. He didn't actually have a whole bunch of people lined up for him to sign this book, did they?
It didn't seem like that.
Right.
Mm-mm.
I don't know.
I think that's why I kept throwing around like, oh, don't make me give you a signed copy of my book, Helen of Troy.
he's what a lame-o.
He needs a new hobby, a new job or something.
I mean, another thing what's quite good is that Darren's reaction was quite well done, actually, because he was like, because Samantha, I mean, let's face it, it's like, you know, he didn't have a go at Samantha about Andorra's antics, which was quite well, I mean, quite considering it. And then when he had to go out and face Bob and try to play this off, he did very well, I think. You know, it wasn't like, oh, Samantha, this is your fault. How dare you? Da, 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 don't you? You know, it wasn't any of that. So that was quite good as well. So we got Darren.
Well, I also thought it was interesting that when Samantha was trying to explain to Darren the situation, she kind of did it in front of him, like even mentioning magic, mother, like the keywords, just so he would kind of get it. And then right before he brought her into the kitchen to try to understand what was going on.
Yeah. So now this brings us to, which episode did we like the best out of this block? We would normally talk about what favorite characters we have, but I think we're probably Andorra hands down, and maybe. Well, okay, let's do favorite character. Let's figure out. So who's your favorite character and least favorite character? Start with Vicky, because she loves this segment.
I would have to say favorite character for all of the segments.
Yeah, well.
Well,
out of this block.
Oh, out of the slot. God, that's kind of hard, because I want to say Andorra, but she didn't really show herself too much in the last one, because she was pretending to be Samantha. But I have to say that I would have to say I liked how Samantha, I like the interaction between Andorra and Samantha. I love how she wants to be the mother. She's my favorite character, because although she's playful and devious and all those things that a mother-in-law most likely is, But she loves her daughter and she wants the best for her daughter. And she always wants to help, even though it sometimes it might not be the best thing or the obvious thing to do, like date, you know, Darren's friends as Samantha and, you know, make it look really bad. Cause that's gotta be a small town and she's out with another man and everybody knows she's married to Darren. So I didn't really even think of that before, but I just love how, I just love it because she's a wise ass and she's playful. And I just don't see how this show would ever endure without her, you know, meddling and just her, you know, matronly, whatever.
I get it. Get it.
What? Endure.
I definitely wouldn't endure, you know what I mean?
Endure without Endora. Well, I mean, she's the name itself, you know, it's just kind of playful, actually. Pandora, Endora, you know, the Witch of Endor in the Bible, you know.
Do you know where that?
So who's your least favorite character of this block?
God, I don't really have one. I hate that. I'm going to have to say Gladys got on my nerves. Because she just won't stop. But that doesn't make her my least favorite character because her acting is so good that she does get on my nerves. Okay, the least favorite character will have to be the drunk friend at the bar with Darren, who's useless. He really didn't do anything. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't ever come back.
Yeah.
And you don't get vested in him at all.
I don't think so.
No.
Not even the little girl with the wheelbarrow. You don't get vested in her either. She's just there. It's just these random people that just pop in their lives. You know,
yeah, it's almost like one of the Bradys came over and visited Samantha. That's what it felt
yeah,
like.
Yeah, basically, it's like
exactly. I honestly thought for a minute, I thought it was Maureen McCormick because you know, she comes on an episode or two,
yeah,
in like Genie and Bewitched because that's what was going on before Brady Bunch. So I thought it was her at first, but then I realized it wasn't, yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
What about you, Jess? Who's your favorite character and your least favorite character?
Well, I always say Endora for the most part. So this time I'm going to say it, Samantha, just because I really feel like Elizabeth Montgomery has, she really showcased her like acting abilities here as, you know, different characters. And in Bewitched, she's like the one and only actor, I think, that plays multiple characters. Because later on she'll play Serena, she plays her mother, she plays herself, and she also plays herself playing Serena, just like different renditions of herself and different characters. It's just kind of phenomenal. And she's very charismatic. Like this show honestly wouldn't be the same if she wasn't Samantha, because she's really the heavy, I think, for the show, and then Endora and Darren and stuff. But I don't know, Darren's the most unrelatable character. So even though Dick York is a phenomenal actor, I have a hard time relating to him or even liking him, because I don't relate to how he reacts or responds to things. I understand why he does, but I don't relate to it, because I myself, if I was in a situation, would respond entirely too differently. So I don't know. I definitely think Samantha's my favorite character in this sequence, especially.
She is versatile.
What about your least favorite?
My least favorite, honestly, any of the extras that come in and just for like one or two episodes, just as like extras. Like it could be the little girl Kim, even though she was cute and funny. You know, she's not going to be seen again.
We have a lot.
And then also the bartender and the drunk guy. You know, that's true. I mean, the strongest character actors are probably Endora. Yeah, Ling Ling, that was hysterical too. I really did like that episode, but never mind, I can't say a favorite episode because that's a favorite character right now, but you know what I mean. You know what I'm trying to say.
I have a hard time picking favorite characters out of Bewitched or least favorite,
because I love
them all. They're so integral.
No, I don't. Yeah, I don't have a hard time picking a favorite one, because I always like, there's always that one episode that glows for me, and that's normally who's steering that episode for me, and the reason why it glows for me. So,
right.
Like for my favorite is Samantha playing Endora.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the thing is, you know, when you first start watching Samantha, it's a sitcom, and let's face it, normally with sitcom actors, you get what you get, sort of thing. And yeah. this shows that Elizabeth Montgomery is a force to be reckoned with. I mean, she is such a brilliant, good actress. Because no one, I mean, I can't think of any other sitcom where a person would be able to take someone who's on the show with them and do a total carbon copy of another actor's performance and do it so convincingly, but have to still, you know, but still have to do it dressed as yourself.
Right.
You know, and just the little touches and the voice and the mannerisms and the way she carried her body and everything that went around with it. And, you know, and it also, I mean, I think what also was just quite funny, because it's not a caricature of Andorra. It's a loving tribute to Andorra.
Yeah.
And it could have been so easy to just take the piss out of Andorra. Let's take the piss out of Andorra and let's do this whole episode where I'm going to just take the piss out of Agnes Moorhead. But it's not. It's lovingly done. And if you're going to do something that lovingly and that close to detail, also gives you an idea how the show's being done, that, you know, that everyone really likes each other. And that, so exactly. I think, and that's what I quite liked. The only thing that, I guess my least favorite character for me, is going to have to be Ron Randall, because the guy who played Bob, or the person.
He was kind of abrasive, wasn't he? Now that I think about it.
He wasn't abrasive, but the thing is that if he had, let's sit there and say that he had 100% charm about him, and he was just so, you know, so charming, but there wasn't that much, there wasn't a lot of charm there, and so therefore you're thinking,
that's true,
and it, you know, so therefore you're kind of going, why is Andorra going for him? But then, let's sit there and say he was like Omar Sharif, or that kind of charming, though Omar Sharif for me was never good looking, but there was always that charm. Or that Cary Grant charm. You don't have to be good looking, but just have that charm. You know, and so you can put people on the charm defensive, and I probably would have felt more for there. So basically, I'm loving Andorra, but unfortunately, I don't understand the attraction to Bob.
I didn't find him attractive at all, personally, though. I wouldn't have if I was, you know, from between now and probably 65. There's just nothing. He's not attractive. He's just your average Joe.
But let's sit there and say that Adam West played that part instead.
Would have gone for it.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? Because there's just, you know, you kind of need that kind of good-looking, kind of debonair, suave look. Especially if Andorra is going to fall for him. Andorra doesn't fall for
Andorra's picky. Especially for mortals. I mean, it has to be a special kind of mortal. Yeah. You know, in order for her to fall.
She also fell for Andorra now.
Darren's father.
No, because the thing is, she was quite taken by Darren's dad, wasn't she? Because he was classy. Mm-hmm. I think she's fine with class. You know, I think if you're going to be with Andorra, you're going to have to be classy and not trashy.
Like Cary Grant classy.
Yep. Yeah, precisely. You know, you don't want to, you know.
And spontaneous and stuff, too.
Yeah, you don't want to end up, you know, she's going to be with, like a Clint Eastwood, not Harvey Keitel. You know what I mean? sort of thing.
So, when you look back through styles and stuff, men did have a lot of class back then. I love the long coats, you know, like the presidents wear now, and the hats were really cool. I mean, you see Cary Grant, just looks badass. You know, that's so gone. You're not, well, you know, one, it's masculine. You're not allowed to be masculine anymore. So, you know, it's bad.
Yeah.
I think, like men who are men. So,
yeah. So I think, you know, to be honest, I don't think it's the actor's fault. I just think that they slightly miscast this one.
It does seem like it. Now, when I think about it, because I thought he was kind of, I don't know. He just seemed like a lech a little bit too, because he was, he wasn't a very nice person, I guess, is what I'm trying to, I don't know.
I think if he was like
a successful writer,
he would have gone for Darren's wife, no matter what. So he didn't really have any moral turpitude.
Oh, that's true. He said that himself. That's true. I forgot about that.
Yeah, but to be fair, you know, he thought that Darren's wife was, because he says to her at one point when she's
trying
to break
your
up
husband?
With him. She loved her husband and she couldn't do it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Well, it's because it wasn't
actually her.
Yeah, but, you know, he doesn't know that. So therefore, you know,
yeah,
you know, so therefore, he, you know, So he's like, well, she doesn't love Darren, but she loves me. So I can understand why he would
do that. There's a code, though. You don't go after anybody else's wife or women.
That code only works if you know. If you meet someone and you don't know that they're married and you're spending 4 days and four nights with each other and you don't know that person's with your best friend,
yeah,
and you develop feelings, that I think that's a bit different than, you know, you go to their house, you see the wife and decide to date her after meeting her with the husband.
You know, okay, so do you think that they're insinuating a physical relationship?
Well, they said 4 days and four nights. I don't, you know, but, you know, this is the 60s, so it's all about what's not being said. So,
right.
And to be honest, I mean, Bewitched has set the bar. I mean, you know, this is the first sitcom and the first television show on television that shows a married couple sharing a bed.
True.
So. Oh, that reminds me. There was a reference to that in a show called WandaVision that I've been watching, which is cool.
Yeah, I haven't started watching WandaVision yet.
They heavily reference Bewitched a lot at first, those, and then the Dick Van Dyke, and then I Love Lucy and stuff like that. But they definitely reference that scene because Wanda puts the beds together after she gets scared by hearing something outside or whatever. She accidentally puts the beds together, and then from then on, they just sleep in the same bed. Mm. So I thought that was a cute little nod to Bewitched. Plus, she's a witch, so, you know, it's a black and white show about a witch.
I'm quite interested in that. I'm quite interested where that goes. I'm quite enjoying it.
I also learned that they did the special effects the same way they would do them in something like Bewitched. They didn't do CGI. They did CGI for like tiny things, but they wanted to make it feel like an actual show from the period. So they did stick to like the fish wire and all of those fun little special effects they did. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We got a fish wire really when Samantha's getting her keys at one point, didn't we? Where you saw the keys going down the stairs. Yeah. Like, and the keys are gone.
Yeah, you can see the glint of the fish wire in some of the lighting.
Yeah. So this brings us to our favorite episode and our least favorite episode. And starting with Jesse, what's your favorite episode and what's your least favorite episode of this block?
Oh, it's really hard because it's either this one or the one where they have to deal with the traffic lights, because these were the two most different that I've seen in a while. So they introduced some new elements to the show that kind of felt really refreshing. And then you got to see Samantha and Darren interact with more of their community and stuff like that. And I thought that was really cool. But I might have to say, honestly, I think just because of the ending, I did like Which Witch is Which a lot better, just because it was more risque, I guess. And I kind of like that they're doing that on Bewitched. Yeah. It was slightly risque, just ever so slightly. Not too much. but yeah, that was probably my favorite episode just because of how it ended. Because sometimes an episode starts off really strong and then it ends on a lesser note. But I think this one started off really well and then ended really well, and everything in between was really good and well done too. And Elizabeth Montgomery's acting was really good too. So yeah, I think that for me makes it the best episode.
And what about your least favorite?
My least favorite. Ugh. Maybe on this, what is the name of it? The one where Darren questions her.
Eye of the Beholder.
Yeah, I wasn't that impressed with that one. I totally forgot about that one. So seeing it the second time around didn't do it justice. I don't know. It started off really strong, but then the rest of the episode was just kind of blah. So that was probably my least favorite episode.
And what about you, Vix? What's your favorite and least favorite?
My favorite one was with the stoplights. I just thought it was funny that Endora went around collecting bobbies from England to stoplights from all over the world so she could give her daughter the perfect stoplight for Morning Glory Circle. I just thought that was well done. It was just funny because, you know, it was just sweet. I just love how Endora interacts because my mother's still alive, God bless her, and I just totally adore my mother. So maybe that's why. I don't know. I just love how moms, they just want to do, you know, here or there, no matter if they're here or in heaven or whatever. You just remember your mom is wanting to do everything for you, as, you know, mothers and daughters kind of thing. So, but in the least favorite, God, I hate that one. It wasn't The Witch Witch. It wasn't Ling Ling. What was the other one?
Eye of the Beholder.
Eye of the Beholder.
How old is Puff?
Although there were aspects of Eye of the Beholder, I liked like how they humanized, you know, Darren and him wanting, you know, to, I don't know. I think he was just worried too much about, you know, age is not a big thing, I don't think anymore, but this is the 60s. So people probably would talk, but I would think that Samantha would just age with him and just do a spell kind of thing instead of stay young. But I mean, not that it was a bad episode. I really liked it. I thought it was sweet, but you know, it was like Jesse says, you know, I couldn't remember the name of it, but it wasn't as memorable as like the stoplights or, you know, playful Endora doing, you know, wreaking havoc in everybody's life or, you know, you got a cat, you know, that's a woman now. I mean, it's just things you'd expect to happen around witches, I guess, of this caliber. So.
My favorite is Witch, Witch is Witch, because it just works on every single level. And it left me wanting more. Like when the series ends and they're going to sit down for dinner, I wanted to go on. I wanted to see what that dinner party was like when they're all four of them are sitting there. I just wanted to go on because I couldn't get enough of it. And it's also because it's also, for me, it's also the first time you see split screen where Samantha, you see them both in the screen together.
That's true.
You also know that that's going to become very, very important later on in the series as well. And you also got the diversity. And it's like you have a show about Endora, but Endora's not in it, but you feel like Endora is in it. And that's, that takes something to pull that off.
Well, yeah, she's definitely still present. So even though, you know, you know it's Endora, you think it's Endora. So it was done really well. It really was.
Yeah, because it's Endora pretending that she's Samantha, played by Samantha being an Endora. And it's just like, it's a total mind.
It's done so well.
Precisely. I mean, it's a bit like trying to like describe Terminator, isn't it? Like, you know, he's going back in time to give birth to his son, but he has that. When he tried to work it out, I was like,
it all works out eventually. Yeah,
precisely. So it was kind of like that, but that's what I loved about that. My least favorite is going to have the Eye of the Beholder. I think the reason why is because Bewitched has a really good way of that when you have these touching moments that it almost tears apart your heart. And, you know, we got it with Darren when Darren's mom decides that the dad really loves her, or when Clara comes back, you know, she doesn't think that she's messed things up, you know, and she leaves, and you know, when Darren's parents ask to bring her back and all this other stuff. And you get these really heartfelt moments that you're like, it really tugs at your heartstring. And I think the Eye of the Beholder missed that. I think if it had that, I think it would have gone up, but it wasn't. Even when when they decide they're going to work it out, it just kind of like, okay, I'm not feeling anything here. And I think that if they had that great big, emotional or something that tugged at your heartstrings, it probably would have felt more. And it kind of like, it's almost like they hit something, they teased you with something and then they kind of like snatched it away. It's a bit like, you know, here, have a piece of candy. And as the kid's about to put it in the mouth, he just yanked it out and like ran off.
Yeah.
So. When it was also really one-sided, because Samantha didn't even know what was going on with Darren. It was all exclusively on Darren. No one else but Darren knew what was going on with Darren. And so there was nothing really for them to work on. It was really for him to work on. And he had already worked on it by the time Samantha showed up. Okay. So there wasn't much for you to, to hold on to, because Samantha didn't know about it. And I think we were kind of seeing things maybe more through her perspective as an audience, because we're already knowing like everything that's going on with Darren. We know that he fixed, you know, that he kind of came to the conclusion more or less after hearing the conversation with the old couple. And you kind of clearly see that touched him in a way. So I feel like that's why you didn't feel like the impact of his decision. And maybe also because this has happened before, you kind of know he's going to make that decision too. I don't know.
But there's also the simple fact that
there's so many different reasons why it didn't work.
But if Samantha loves Darren like she says she is, and this, I think this is another thing that the show is missing. If Samantha loves Darren the way that she says she does, and she knows the fact that Darren has an expiry date, that he's going to die someday, and she's going to be on her own, and she's going to have to live how many hundreds of years without him. you think that she would have been slightly affected and wanted to think about the, or explain herself, even if it's not to Darren, but to her mom or whatever. Oh, I don't want to think about that now or something. But you didn't get that either. So it almost felt like, it's like Samantha's like kind of, okay, well, you know, Darren's going to have to kind of come to grips with this, but not, but you don't really know how she feels about it as well, because it's going to affect her as well.
You know, that reminds me of, remember in Lord of the Return of the King, when Arwen's father is explaining to her that, you know, someday, you know, he's the king's going to die and that Arwen's going to go on, you know, lonely, yeah, alone in the mortal world, being an immortal, you know. So that kind of reminded me of that when you said that, for a reason, because she was so in love with him that she would, you know, give up her immortality to be with him in the Lord of the Rings trilogy. So, yeah, you would think.
Yeah, she could. I mean, they could have touched on it. But then again, I think it's one of those stories that I had a really good idea, but they didn't know how to flesh it out properly. Yeah, and maybe it's difficult to flesh it out in 25. I mean, let's face it. I mean, they're really big issues, aren't they, for a 20-minute
segment. Yeah.
But
I think
they have also kind of touched on this similar subject before. Like, it felt like a rehashing of something that they already did better in another episode.
Yeah. So I think so. That's the reason why it didn't really play off for me. You know, I said before, it's, you know, when your prologue is the strongest thing in the show, then you know you got a little bit of problems going on here, sort of thing. As Jesse says, it started high and it kind of just slowly slopes to the end. Things,
yes,
downwards. Well, that brings us to the end of the Literary License Podcast. Next month, we'll be doing Bewitched Season 1, Episodes 25-28.
Yep.
And, of course, next episode, our Nature versus Man, we'll be doing Mad Max from 1978 and Mad Max Fury Road from 2019, which will be something very interesting. We'll see how a film franchise has changed over 40-year cycle. So yays. And then, of course, we'll be doing Dark Shadows. And then next month, our classic novel will be Robinson Crusoe, the book by William Defoe and the 1956 Academy Award-winning classic. Yep. So it's good night for myself and good night, Vicky.
Good night, everybody. Take care.
Good night, Jesse.
Have a good night, folks.
And Jesse's we'll see you already asleep.
And we'll see you next week for Nature versus Man, Mad Max, and Mad Max Fury Road.
Yay!
I'm not talking to you. Styles keep a changing, the world's rearranging, but Edna, you're timeless to me. Hemlines are shorter, a beer costs a quarter, but time cannot take what comes free. You're like a stinky old cheese, babe, just getting riper with age. You're like a fatal disease, babe,
what?
But there's no cure, so let this fever rage. Some folks can't stand it, say time is a bandit, but I take the opposite view. 'Cause when I need a lift, time brings a gift, another day with you. A twist or a waltz, it's all the same schmaltz, with just a change in the scenery. You'll never be old hat, that's that. You're timeless to me. Feds keep a fading, Castro's invading, but Wilbur, you're timeless to me. Hairdos are higher, mine feels like barbed wire, but you say I'm chic as can be. You're like a rare vintage ripple, a vintage they'll never forget. So pour me a teeny weeny triple.
Anytime.
And we can toast the fact we ain't dead yet.
What?
I can't stop eating, your hairline's receding,
hey.
And soon you'll have nothing at all.
No.
So you'll wear a wig while I roast a pig. Hey, pass that carrot all. Glenn Miller had brass, chubby checkers like gas, but they all pass eventually.
You'll never be passé. Hip hooray! You're timeless to me. Broken down Chevy. All I need is a fresh coat of paint. And Edna, you got me going hot and heavy. You're fat and old, but baby, boring you ain't.
Some folks don't get it, but we never fret it. Cause we know that time is our friend. Yeah, it's plain to see that you're stuck with me until the bitter end.
You'll always hit the spot, big shot. You're timeless to me.
You'll always be du jour, mon amour. You're timeless to me.
You'll always be first string.
Ring a ding ding.
You're timeless to me. You're timeless to me.
You're timeless to me.
You're timeless to me.